if you can, A, win them back, and B, stop that number of people from defecting from you in the future, you automatically give a big boost to your customers. If right now your attrition rate, if you do nothing, is that you are losing 20% of your customers every year who just stop dealing with you, mm-hmm. and you recognize that, and you install a process and programming designed to eliminate or reduce attrition, that simple step alone can add 10 or 20% to your sales and to your number of customers in the course of 1 year or less. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, and if that happens for several years in a row, you're going to do extremely well.
It's exact. But if you do nothing else, and keep in mind, we're trying to give you, in the course of this and perhaps the next session, because I don't know if we'll get it all done in this session, we're trying to give you simple little processes that give you massive, continuous, and perpetual improvements in the profit, the sales, and the predictability of your business for years to come.
Yeah. Okay, how about, you want to do some more specifics here?
I've got 30 of them, so I can do a bunch
okay.
of them just in this category.
Start cooking.
It's my pleasure. I just want to make sure I don't just go through them rat-tat-tat without a lot of embellishment, because I don't think the impact and the implication and the profound value of them will be known to people.
Yeah, we've got 30 minutes left here, Jay, so however you want to handle it.
Okay. So we've already done 60 minutes?
Right.
Okay, good. Yeah, let me just continue, because I think, is this interesting to you?
Yeah, it is.
Sure. Okay. The next category of building customers is acquiring customers at a break-even up front and making a profit on the back end. Far too many business owners that I meet have a delusionary understanding of what their goal is. First of all, let me make an assumption. Assuming you've got enough business in place, enough cash flow flowing, enough security that you're not going to go broke tomorrow morning, your goal is not the moment as a business owner. Your goal is to look forever. And the way you guarantee the future, the way you assure forever, is to bring in a constant and a continuous flow of new customers now. All things being equal, if your predictable existing business base more than covers your overhead and your lifestyle needs and your cash flow, every incremental new customer you can bring on can produce for you enormous future streams of income, particularly if you have a highly repetitive business or product or service, or you can find other products or services of value and desire that you can introduce, offer, or make available to these people. So in many businesses, I counsel them to not think about making lots of money bringing new customers in, particularly if they've not brought a lot of new customers in for a long time, but rather find ways to bring customers in at or up to a break-even up front, because those customers will bring them so much more future business in the months, the weeks, the years to come. And you do that by allowing – the concept of break-even up front applies a number of different ways. It can mean – that you are willing to spend a lot of money in outside advertising, knowing that that's what it takes to find new customers and introduce them to you. It can mean that you're willing to give away an incredible product or service value, maybe not free, but far under market, and the spread is really profit, but you're willing to break even because you know that that offer will so appeal to the quality of people who represent the most predictable ongoing customer source for you that it's long-term worth your while. It may mean that it's worth your while to go out and acquire a number of other products or services that you can combine together to add to the proposition to make the initial sale that you have with a new heretofore fresh customer so valuable that they are inclined to start a relationship with you because they get so much value, knowing you don't make very much or any profit now, but you bring a lot of people to your business who will migrate through and buy over and over again. It may mean that you extend the guarantee and that maybe there's some fulfillment requirement or expense involved, and that expense is all your profit, but that offer of the extended guarantee gets a lot of new people to start buying from you. It may be that you pay, I'll tell you a quick story, which I may have told in one of the other tapes, by understanding the future revenue stream, the life value, the marginal net worth of a customer. One time I got a company to triple their business just by 10 times increasing the sales commission they gave to their salespeople for the first new customers they brought in. Because I showed them that every time a salesman or woman brought them a new customer, that new customer made them $3,000 more over the life of purchasing history they would have with them over the next 3 years, which is what their lifetime value was. And that by giving 10 times the commission to their salespeople today, they would be accruing an enormous fortune for themselves, the business owners in the future. I did a consultation yesterday, Marty, where the same issue came up. And I'll tell you another thing we did with the Wizard's Edge as an example. I'll bring it close to home. I was talking to a man who is trying to put together a breakthrough approach for advertisers where he has bought space in magazines with a total circulation of 55 million readers and subscribers. He's trying to get small advertisers to place ads in the space for their catalogs that he runs in these magazines. It's a very big commitment. You have to buy a $35,000 little ad, but that gives you 55 million circulation, which is profound leverage. But it's unproven. He doesn't know advertising. He's struggling. I said to him, the profit, by the way, if it works, is he makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. If it doesn't work, he loses $1 million. I said, it seems to me that, then, by the way, this profit will keep accruing to him every month. These people advertise.
Mm-hmm.
I said to him, it seems to me that you've got more to gain by getting it started and succeeding than you do making money right now. And he said, yes. And I said, I'd rather break even, go to some people who already are dealing with advertisers like media reps, give them 5 or 10 times what they normally get for representing a magazine to represent your pages in the magazine, and do that for 6 months and let them make 10 times what they normally make, because they'll be 10 times more motivated to divert their advertisers to you than to their other magazines. And in the process of doing that, you'll get started right away. You won't make any money, but you'll get these advertisers started and committed to buying from you, so that when 6 months stops and these people go to regular commission, the advertisers will be so habituated on using your property that they'll be doing it every month thereafter, and you won't make any money for 6 months, but you'll start making $200,000 or $300,000 a month thereafter. Mm-hmm. I made a proposition to a very large company that has a customer base of exact prospects for the Wizard's Edge, and I suggested to them that I would work a joint venture. If they would do certain things that I suggested, I would let them keep all of the profit necessary, all the profit evident on selling a subscription for year one, if they would get me a certain minimum number of subscriptions. It was a $1 million proposition to them, which was 20 times more than anyone's ever offered them. But I showed them that it was to my self-serving advantage, because if they got me 5,000 subscribers and it didn't cost me anything, but I didn't lose anything, and I performed, I probably would keep 2,500 of them or more next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I would get 2,500 people paying me $500 next year. For them, we're basically making a lot more money now. It was in my self-serving advantage to break even on acquisition. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
When we get subscribers to the Wizard's Edge, just because somebody paid us $500, they think we made $400. The truth of the matter is, whatever the cost of producing the product, less the subscription price, in other words, it costs $500, and let's say the hard cost of the tape and whatever to get out to you is $50 or $60 or $70, that spread is what we spend on advertising or marketing to acquire a new customer, because we are playing a lifetime game. I am saying I may not have made a dime on the person listening to this interview today, and I don't expect to until year two.
Okay.
But it's worth it to me, because if I get you habituated, you're going to stay with us for years and years and years. And the byproduct will be that we'll both profit long term. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. And that's another reason why you give so many ideas on any given tape, because people know you're going to do that all the time.
They know I'm going to do it, but also they know that I'm trying to pay for their subscription with a fraction of the profits they make if they take action.
Mm-hmm.
The optimum value exchange is where I actually make you the money to pay for this and keep a lot left over. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Should we continue?
Please.
By the way, we're not going to finish today, but it should start, don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, guaranteeing purchases through risk reversal. If you don't have a strong risk reverse denominated guarantee program in place – just by instituting one, whatever your normal flow of customers are right now, if you don't change anything, just if you keep spending the same amount of money on advertising, or if you just basically keep having the same number of people write you or call you or visit your company or your store or your facility, or you keep going out and calling on the same people, if your normal approach has been to offer your product without a guarantee or just to say satisfaction guarantee, and now you change the offer in your advertising, in your sales presentations, in your material, in your literature, in your brochures, to denominate very specific and very powerful and very incomparably desirable specific risk-reverse guarantees, that alone will normally improve your closures, meaning the number of customers you start adding, by 30 to 300% or more. See, any one of these can give you massive lift. Combinations will blow your numbers off the chart.
Okay.
Pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Host-beneficiary relationships. By going to other companies who have already invested years of effort, tens or hundreds of thousands or millions or tens of millions of dollars in advertising, in publicity, in people, in equipment, in facilities to develop their goodwill with customers who are exactly the same profile that you want, but you're not competitive with these people, and getting them to embrace what I call a host-beneficiary relationship, where they introduce your products or services to their company, either through their distribution sources or network, or through endorsement, or through a combination, you can produce massive numbers of new customers. Actually, far more cost-effectively, even if you do a 50-50 profit split or a 25-75 profit split or some kind of an exchange of endorsements with these people, you can get more customers from this one process than every other advertisement or selling method or mechanism you use.
Okay, I know you're going to say this is too abstract, but can you give us an example of a small to medium-sized business situation that might use that?
Sure. Why don't I start with some other examples, and then we'll bring it down.
Right.
I grew tens of millions of dollars of business for newsletters, for investment firms, for all kinds of advisory people by going to newsletters who had already spent fortunes identifying investors who had money to invest and had capital to grow and preserve, and getting them to recommend other newsletters that weren't competitive that dealt with other investment or tax issues, and get them to recommend other investment services that sold specific kinds of investments or investment advice or tax strategies that would help their investments. The endorsers, the newsletters, made a lot of money for endorsing. The beneficiaries, who were the other newsletters that were recommended or the investment firms or the investment advisors, got instant credibility because they benefited from taking advantage of all the cumulative trust the endorsers, the hosts, had built over the years with their customers or their clients or their subscribers. They got incredible amount of leverage because it was a safe harbor. They got recommended and endorsed in the newsletter itself, and there was no other competitors, so they got thousands and thousands of customers. In one case, we took a company that sold annuities, and we sold $60 million worth of annuities in about 12 months' time just through endorsements.
Okay.
I sold $3 billion worth of gold and silver and precious metals in the 80s through endorsements.
Okay, how about the smaller, medium-sized business? And I know that's part of the
simple. All you got to do is say, who else has the same profile customer that I do? Let's say you're a jewelry store. And let's say you're an upscale jewelry store, all right? Who else sells upscale products to an affluent customer who already has their trust? And you could say high-end clothing stores, high-end shoe stores, high-end auto dealerships, right?
Okay.
High-end restaurants, right?
Okay.
Any of those organizations could cooperatively endorse, recommend, or offer the products or services of any of the other ones to their customers, and it would not be competitive, but it would be right on the mark. And if I, for example, let's do a better example. If Jay Abraham has the respect and the trust of his Wizard's Edge subscribers, Jay Abraham could introduce you to to a book. If I told you, Marty, and you told our subscribers, there is a book that has impacted me more than any other book I've read. I've read it 50 times. Every time I read it, it makes me at least $200,000. I've made over $100 million for myself and my clients from it. It was written long ago. It takes all of 2 hours to read. It's out of publication. I have the only copy. I'm getting it reproduced. I don't have the willingness to sell it in the outside market because people will, I have to work too hard and people won't appreciate it. The book has made me such an incredible amount of money that its value is priceless. It's certainly worth more than a $20 book. It's probably worth more than having a $20 million consultant on site to you. I'd like to sell it for the publisher. I'm going to sell it exclusively to you and make it available for a year before we'll have it available on the market. You can try it out for 60 days before we'll consider the purchase binding. If you fail to make a profit that produces for you a multiple at least 10 times what the book costs, send it back and we'll refund your money on the spot. If you make 10 times, that's not very much. You should work harder, and I wish you even greater prosperity. Would you be inclined to buy that book?
I think I would.
So the point is, but you'd be doing it because of two things. Certainly my ability to articulate it powerfully, but that ability would only have value because you trusted me. My host recommendation or endorsement, does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
So the trick is you find other companies who have already worked harder than you have, who have already invested far more years and far more capital and far more human capital than you have, to identify your best prospective target audience, and they have that audience's trust, and you get them to introduce you to that audience through either special offers, through endorsements, through having you there, through hosting you at their facilities, through hosting parties at your facilities, to introducing your products, to break-even offers, to special discounts, to whatever it takes that's appropriate given your product or service. Is that more tangible, or should I take it deeper?
Okay. No, that's okay. We have about 14 minutes left here, and I want to make sure you have time to tell us what you have planned for next month, because I'm kind of curious.
Well, why don't we take a stop for a minute? I've done 30 different primary options you got in the first box. I've got an equivalent amount in the second box and a slightly lesser in the third, and it'll probably take me into the next. So first thing I'd say is the next interview we do will probably pick up on this because I think it's such a valuable and such a clarifying and exciting area. At least I'm excited about it. Basically, it's been the process I've used to grow probably $3.5 billion worth of profits for people and an enormously larger amount of sales. So I think it's something that we could share very dimensionally, but it'll take part of the next and maybe the next tapes after that. So that's what we'll have in store next one, first of all, right?
Okay.
Number two is I had a concept, and I'm going to try to modify it because I didn't know how much this week had done this month. The original concept was 90 million-dollar ideas in 90 minutes. So I'm going to take that theme, and I'm going to modify it depending on how many minutes we've got. In other words, I'll have had 90 great ideas to share in 90 minutes. If on the next session we take 45 minutes to finish this,
okay,
it'll be 45 million-dollar ideas in 45 minutes.
Okay, now what do you mean by million-dollar ideas?
Ideas that have the capacity to make $1 million, not necessarily in 1 year, but of their own volition for somebody who applies it. It may be $1 million over 10 years, but the point is if I give you $45 million worth of ideas, you ought to be able to implement one or combinations or multiples in your business and reap magnificent improved profits either immediately or over the next 10 years.
Okay. That's awfully tantalizing.
Well, eventually what I've done, I've been compiling the best, easiest, most profit-certain and success-proven money-making, wealth-building, business growth ideas that I have seen that are applicable not only to growing your business but little what I'll call money hobbies, people who basically have got their businesses to levels they can't comfortably or they don't want to grow anymore. I'm going to also introduce like side ideas that anybody can do as profit hobbies for themselves, things you can do on a Saturday that may make you $5,000 or $10,000 a month, things you can do with your friends in other businesses that may get them great, great, great improved profits and have them give you a share forever. I'm going to show you basically in about 5 minutes how I did what I did for 10 years and made myself $20 million. And I'm going to do a bunch of things like that.
Okay.
in issues after that, I've got something pretty interesting, an exciting plan. I have been on the phone with a number of my friends and colleagues, and as you probably know, I have a great joy of having relationships with some of the foremost and preeminent business, selling, innovative leaders and thinkers and entrepreneurs and advertising greats and promotional geniuses and idea men and women, not just in the country but in the world. And I've persuaded a number of them to get on the phone with me and you, if we can get the communication clear enough, and let me pick their minds in a series of 5 and 10 minute power interviews where I go right to the marrow of what Tony Robbins would be their organizing principles are. In other words, the key elements that they have used most frequently to give themselves and their customers or their followers or their students or their clients or their businesses preeminence and enormous wealth. And I plan on basically playing off that, not always in just one session, but over a number of sessions.
Mm-hmm. That sounds terrific.
I'm going to go through a bunch of very powerful, I'm going to take the 100 most frequently asked questions I get today. Not the ones I got in the recession, but as we're coming somewhat out of it. They're a whole different collection of questions and challenges and issues, and I'm going to address them. Not necessarily in one session, but I'm going to pepper them through the sessions. I'm going to do mini, what I call blitzkrieg consultations, where we spend 2 or 3 minutes having people actually either get on the phone or write in, and we're going to deal with their dilemmas specifically, not just generally.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk about the implications of them. We're going to basically give people breakthrough money-making ideas. I'm going to share with you how to interpret things you discover or are exposed to in your life. I'm going to take articles that I will cut out of things like Forbes, of things like the Wall Street Journal, of things like USA Today, of silly little trade publications you would never read yourself. I'm going to summarize the articles, tell you what the obvious message or lesson therein is for everybody, and then I'm going to tell you how to interpret and permutate it into 3 or 4 other profit opportunities for you and your colleagues. We've got a lot of fun things in store, Marty.
Wow. All right. Is there anything that you, just in the about 7 minutes we have left, any 10 ideas that are popping into your mind on any given subject?
Well, I've got so many ideas. I think the biggest issues that are on my mind right now, and I do another series of telephone lectures for a very elite group of real estate people, and in that group there were a lot of people who demonstrated to me a fascinating and inherent, not a flaw, but an element of human weakness that I think all the people that are listening to this tape should be mindful of and should try to counter-program. That is that most of us don't really try many things. Most of us don't execute. Most of us don't put into application very many things. And when we look at our lives periodically, whether it be verbally or non-verbally, and we're frustrated, we don't deserve to even utter that kind of a definitive statement because we haven't, for the most part, most of us, expended anywhere close to enough of an effort to justify even being that kind of a critical nature. Let me give you more example. I was at a program one time that Tony Robbins, who's a friend of mine, was conducting. It was a very interesting program. At that program, he was trying to help people who hadn't achieved their objectives in life, not just in business or making money, but in relationships and love and happiness and security, abate stress, successfully achieve their objective. And he had people come up and they would talk about what they've done so far in their life toward that end. And one man I very vividly remember standing up said, "Tony, I've tried everything." Tony looked at him in a very, very mocking sort of Larry's voice, he raised his voice and said, "Everything?" And the man said, "Yes, everything to overcome." And I can't remember what the plight was, but let's say to become successful at business. And I said, "Okay, well, show me the last 100 things you've tried in the last 6 months." And the man looked at Tony and said, "Well, I haven't tried 100 things." And I said, "Okay, how about the last 50? And he said, "Well, I haven't done 50 things." He said, "Well, how about the last 25? And he said, "Well, I haven't done 25. And he said, "How many have you done?" And the man said, "One or two." And I think that we are our own worst enemies, and I caution everybody subscribing to The Edge to not allow themselves to look upon this as just stimulating intellectual entertainment, because it's not my intent. I don't think it's yours, Marty. You're not advocating and championing and torque converting and interpreting what I'm saying for our listeners as a means of just entertaining them. They want entertainment, they can get it a lot less expensively and a lot better produced, because I'm basically stream of consciousness, and I stutter, and I basically lose my thought a little bit, and I'm not trying to be an entertainer or a performer. I'm trying to transfer to them ideas, information, knowledge, and philosophies that have transactionally been utilized to add billions of dollars to the bottom lines of business owners around the country, to give people security, to give people richness of mind and wallet at a level they never dreamed possible, to liberate people, to give them control. But that is only possible if you take what I share and you determine to apply each month's lessons into your business. In other words, if last month you got an issue of The Edge and you listened and you did nothing with it, that's shameful, because it defeats the purpose. The purpose is every month I want to give you a series of applications, keyword is apply, that you can execute, that you can transact upon, that you can put into application in your situation, that you can try out easily and immediately, most of the time without expending any greater amount of effort, cost, or manpower than you're currently expending to do things on a lesser level. Because I want to give you every month a massive profit financially and an even larger profit emotionally. I cannot do it for you. And my lesson, I think, would be, and my summary comment would be, you've got to take action, and once is not enough. Basically, the greatest achievements you'll get are by combining multiple facets, multiple processes, multiple ideas together, and making them, remember I talked earlier or on one of the very introductory sessions about the difference between the diving board and the Parthenon? I talked about most people's businesses are predicated and dependent on one single source of revenue and one basic driving force. It's probably passive and not proactive, and it's probably very, very, very precarious. That's not what my wish was for them.
Okay, all right. As I'm going to be thinking about the unique selling proposition this month, any 60-second summary on that?
Okay, keep in mind, reason why, what's in it for me, the customer, denominate the advantage or the benefit as tangibly, both tangible in terms of money or result or hard benefit, but also emotionally, what it's going to be like in the context of what's called future pacing, when and if and after I grasp this advantage. Not only the money or the savings or the security, but the feelings. Put yourself in your customer's place. Ask yourself, evaluate, what is it about people and businesses I favor that I get out of it self-serving that makes me comfortable and want to keep coming back and secure with them and desirous of keeping the patronage with them? That's my greatest recommendation for today.
All right. Next month, $45 to $91 million ideas. You've done it before. We'll try it again next month. Talking with Jay Abraham, marketing genius on The Wizard's Edge. Thanks for listening this month. We'll look forward to talking to you next month. This is Marty Stacey. Bye-bye. Welcome once again to The Wizard's Edge with marketing genius
Jay Abraham. Jay, great to talk to you again. We have some exciting things to talk about today. I would guess this could be one of the most exciting Wizard's Edge we've ever done.
It has the merit to do that if you cultivate the right answers out of me, Marty.
All right, let me tell you what I have in mind here. We left the listeners last month kind of in the middle of what I call the power multipliers. You have thought through, experimented, advocated a number of different ways to get geometric growth. These techniques, these ideas can what? Cut off months, years, maybe decades of a business life cycle?
They can do that, Marty. They can basically, they do something more. They give people control. They give people whatever it is they want out of business. If they want to work harder, they give them far greater outcome. If they want to work less, they gave them the same or better yield for a fraction of the effort. If they want to have an annuity in the form of customers coming back to them over and over and over again, they give them that. But they only give that to you if you put together the total elements and you unify it in a systematized way. And I think what we were talking about were all of the components, each additional one of which gives increased geometry to your business results. And by that I mean most people's business results at best are either static, they're regressive, or their growth is linear. We're not interested in this session or in any other session we've done for the Wizard's Edge in linear growth. We want to deal with geometric, with exponential, with explosive on the upside but almost risk-free on the downside ways to grow your business automatically and continuously with predictable, highly profitable, and enjoyable results being realized by you. And this is what we're dealing with in this process here.
Okay. Now, I also would like to have you share about a book that's been key. How much is this book that's now out of print been worth to you?
Conservative estimate. Probably singularly made me about $10 million, but that almost is dwarfed by the amount of money it's allowed me to make my clients and my joint venture partners. I would conservatively estimate that by using the principles and the very almost disarmingly simple lessons that it reveals, the book is called Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. It has enabled me to directly or indirectly contribute or facilitate the addition of probably $500 million of sales and profits for the 10,000 or so business people I've been able to impact with its philosophies. I'd very, very, very much like to share at least a short dissertation or summation or condensation of the elements that this man has learned. And it's very old, man. The man was a key marketing genius back in the 1920s and 30s in this country. But the elements of human nature and of motivation and persuasion and influence and the understanding of the psychology of the buying process and the consumer or the business-to-business buyer is immutable. The realizations and the discoveries this really great thinker and researcher and applications genius realized back in the 1920s are probably more viable and powerful today than even then because so few people are using derivatives of them. Ooh. So I'd love to share it. It'll take me probably 10 or 15 minutes, but I'd love to share what I've learned.
Okay, and then could you fill out the rest of the program? We talked about this last month. You have a list of 90 ideas. I don't know how easily they can be developed, $10,000 to $1 million ideas.
What I've decided to do since we talked about it last time is I want to take a slightly different tack, Marty. I want to start off today, time allowing, and time if it doesn't allow, we'll do it on next session, of course. But I want to start out by sharing with each listener what I'll call easy money techniques to start with. And by that I mean changes and shifts in the way you're doing things, specific strategies, screamingly overlooked, easy, quick, almost effortless opportunities that are blatantly evident to people owning businesses and professional practices and people contemplating that and what I'll call those opportunists amongst us that want to basically put together opportunities that exist in other people's businesses and be the middlemen or the deal makers or the middle women and pick up quick, fast, very impressive profits. I'd like to start today by talking about easy money ways you could add $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 in a transaction in a short period to your bank account from little shifts or little changes or little strategic actions. And then I'd like to build that. I think that if I do a better service, if I give everybody an almost infallible array of working ways they can choose from to find one or two that have the capacity to put $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 in their pocket in a month or two or three, I think that then I'll do them a better service because they'll be better prepared, armed, and committed when I start revealing the bigger, more lucrative money-making and fortune-building ideas that I've got. So I think I'm going to do it in a more of a sequential manner. Today I think I'm going to talk about little shifts, and then I think in the next two calls we'll get into as many of the 90, what I'll call big money principles. This is easy money. We're going to get into big money in the next calls. We might broach on it today, but I think that the agenda that we've got is probably going to be pretty filled before we get to it.
Okay, let's go back to kind of where we left off last month. You were talking about the three boxes with these immediate and personal business profit boosters. What are those three boxes, and take it from there?
Yeah, well, let's go through just a quick review, and if this is redundant for those of you who have already heard it in the previous sessions, I don't even apologize. You can't embrace and address and reflect and act on these three issues with enough attention. Back to basics 101. There are three ways and only three ways known to mankind to increase the results and the performance and the profitability and the dollar units of any business. They are as follows. Number one, you increase the number of customers your business has, maintains, and keeps. Number two, you increase the unit of sale on average that you do with each customer you transact business with. Correspondingly, it's axiomatic, if you increase the unit of sale, you should increase the corresponding amount of profit each sale produces. Number three, you increase the frequency of transaction you can realize from a customer, and if you have a one-shot product or service, you replace that phrase with increasing the number of ways you can derive a stream of income from that customer relationship in an ethical manner. So there are three ways to grow a business. If you, as most people, do not even formally concentrate any attention or time on any of those ways. Everything they do is ad hoc, it's informal, it's sporadic, it's non-systematic, it's anything but strategic. And they get results accordingly. Nothing is, maybe they get an occasional lift, but basically they probably struggle along with very erratic growth and regression, and there's no really systematic process being effected. Those few companies listening to this tape who have any formalized, systematized action, most of those are directed on one of those three areas. Normally, most companies who do have any systemization produce nice, predictable, linear-type growth. We are not interested in linear growth for this discussion. We are only interested in geometric growth. We are only interested in exponential growth. We are only interested in quantum leaps on the upside and underpinning and hedging and virtually all but eliminating risk on the downside. That is best effected if you make a commitment and a formalized, systematized desire to bring to bear every workable, impacting factor you can to increase all three of those boxes. Box one, again, is the number of customers your business has and maintains. Box two is the size of the unit of sale the average customer does with you. Box three is the repeat factor, or the residual amount of revenue you can realize and generate predictably from a given customer. Okay,
all right.
My recollection is on the last session, we got into, I think, four of perhaps 24 ways you can increase the number of customers that you get. So let's go back to that and try to build. I think the last area we were talking about was what we call host beneficiary. That's the process, if you'll remember, of going and identifying all kinds of other businesses, professionals, spheres of influence, affinity groups, associations, and other critical reference sources that are in an impeccably good position to refer or generate or introduce or host you to their customers. And we went through a litany of ways, so I think we finished that session, as I recall. Okay, so let's go to the next one. The fifth option you have, these are all options you have in growing your business, and the first thing you do is grow your customer base. Remember, I'm going to give you the options, and we're going to talk about strategies to bring those options to bear in your business. The fifth option you have is advertising. If you do not or have never advertised, it is conceivably a very viable option. My recommendations on advertising entail the following mandates and the following cautions and the following recommended actions. Number one, whenever you run an ad, try to always work out an arrangement with the advertising medium whereby you are paying more for results than you do for advertising. Every publication, every radio station, every newspaper will not always do variable or revenue shared or contingency type transactions, but you are able often to negotiate partial ones. First option is to go to a radio station, go to a magazine, go to a newspaper, go to a trade show and say, I don't want to pay for unproven advertising. I am willing to pay so much for every sale or so much for every customer that emanates. I will create advertising that very specifically produces a directly correlatable result. Customers I can track back to a specific offer or a specific product that we advertise in your medium. If you are willing, I will not pay you for the advertising. However, I will pay you blank amount for every sale or blank percentage of every sale or blank amount for every inquiry or blank amount or blank fixed dollars for every customer, whatever works for your dynamics. And my goal, Mr. Advertiser, is not to pay you your rate card, but to pay you a multiple of that rate card. That's the first thing. Not everyone will take you up on it. Few might. So if they say no, instead of saying, well, I don't want to advertise with you or capitulating and saying, okay, I will advertise, see what they will take. Some publications will take what's called a guaranteed sale. That's where you've got to pay for the advertising, but they will guarantee you a minimum amount of predictable results, measurable customers, sales, units that will emanate. If you fail to do that, they will do one of two things. Either A, give you make-good ads or commercials up to a certain amount, or number two, keep running advertising for you free until you get to that number. If they won't do that, what a lot of other ones will do is some kind of a partial arrangement. We had an arrangement with a very prominent, very well-known, very impressive national magazine that had agreed to allow us to run a 16-page promotion for one of my very expensive seminars. The rate on the pages was something like $900,000. They would not do a pure variable arrangement where they only got so much per response. We were able to get them to agree to a fixed rate of $160,000, which sounds like a lot, but compared to $900,000 or $950,000, it's a fraction of that, and the remainder paid to them on a variable so much per sale generated from the ad. You never know what you can get unless you negotiate. Negotiation is a function of a psychological strategy. The strategy to effect has got to be one of this. I know my product has merit. I just don't know if your publication does. I am willing to pay a very handsome amount for every sale or every customer or every inquiry. I am not really inclined to waste money. I think it's fair if we both take a partial risk, but it seems equally as fair as if we both basically take some willingness to be responsible for the outcome. And if you can do that, somewhere between 100% variable or contingency and zero contingency is probably where you'll end up. So that's the first thing I suggest, is try to negotiate with the medium for some kind of a vested interest on their part so that if the ad doesn't produce, they lose as well as you. Number two, when you run the ads, try to find an offer that is so compelling, direct response based, and will result in an enormous number of new customers coming forward. The best way to do that is a combination of possibilities. Number one, perhaps you create the offer to embody a incredible value, something that anybody who's got the prospective capability of being an ongoing customer would be drawn to, and it's an easy entry, low-risk way they can start a relationship with you. Maybe you offer something that has a market value of $200 for such a nominal amount that everybody and their brother comes, and you tell them why you're doing it. This is our way of introducing ourselves to new customers. Yes, this is a $100 item. We're only asking $50. We're not even planning on making a dime. We'll probably lose $5 or $10. It's not the way we do business ongoing, but it's a small price to pay for the privilege of getting you to start a buying relationship, getting you to visit our facilities, getting you to meet with our sales professionals, getting you to experience the improved performance, quality, construction, utility of our product, whatever it is. Am I confusing you, Murray?
No, I'm right with you.
Okay, that's the next thing you want to do. Another way might be, if that's inappropriate, to offer some free transactional benefit that a qualified prospect for your product or service would desperately and definitely want. For example, a consultation, an analysis, a report, a video, a booklet, a free trial offer, a 30-day or 15-day or 2-day supply or use of the product or service, something so compelling that a man or woman or business who represents being the target prospect would be hard-pressed not to respond to. Before you run the ad, set up a system in place that knows what it's going to do when and if the advertising you do works. That means this: if people call in or come in or start a buying relationship, it does you no good to get 500 people to buy something from you at no profit if you don't have a system in place to convert those and migrate those people to ongoing customers. So my recommendation is, before you ever advertise, effect, implement, and set up the system to migrate all new customers or prospective inquiries emanating from that advertising to pay dirt for you. And that requires the following. First of all, an awareness that most people need to be nurtured, led. On a previous session, we talked about what I called the strategy of preeminence. Remember?
Right, right.
It requires visiting those issues again and embellishing and incorporating and embodying all those key issues into a system. When new customers come in, the key is not just to transact it and let them go. It's to introduce yourself, to set up a philosophy, to program them for a future buying situation, to introduce them to the philosophies the company's built on, to get them to see and seize the advantage performance-wise and result-wise and protection or advantage-wise your company offers them, and to get that all evident to them and perceived you as being unique and distinctive and more valuable to them and set them up. It's to set up a regular follow-through and follow-up system. It may be visiting them. It may be calling them. It may be sending them critical information. But it's putting them in a cycle. It's capturing and revering and honoring the worth of them and then gestating them. And if you don't have a system in place to do that, it's a blatant waste to run advertising. Because even if you sell everybody who hears your ad, the first sale is a small fraction of the profitability that customer represents to you and to your family's wealth if you set up a system to harvest it. It's like having a farm and having great, great, great virgin land and being content to get one little piddly crop and never, ever retilling, reharvesting, replanting, redoing anything to get that land to pay off again and again and again and again and again. Its worth to you is minimized if you accept one crop and then give up on it. Its worth is maximized if every quarter it produces a different crop yield for you, and four times a year forever it's generating residual energy. That only works if you farm it, if you work it. You must farm all new customers or prospects that emanate from your advertising.
Most of us, I think, tend to approach advertising on a kind of one-to-one basis.
Most of us don't even approach it right. The first thing we do is we don't try to put ourselves in the reader or the listener or the recipient's mind. We don't try to say, well, what about this offer is valuable and beneficial and unique and advantageous? What's the premise? What's the advantage? What's the proposition? What am I trying to get them to do? If I get them to do it, what's in it for them? How do I get them to act? They don't put any of that thought process into it. How do I relieve the risk? How do I give them greater benefit? How do I make it more enriching to act than not to act? Those are the questions you got to ask yourself.
Okay.
Okay, that's number, I think, five, is set up advertising. And advertising, again, depends on what's situationally appropriate for you. If you're in a consumer situation, it might be radio, it might be television, it might be space in the newspaper, it might be a local or a regional or a national magazine, it might be other kinds of special events. But advertising is not cute. Advertising is not abstract. Advertising has to be ruthlessly efficient. It has to justify its existence, its expense. It's like it's as if you had hired. Advertising is salesmanship multiplied or saleswomanship multiplied. As such, you would not hire 10,000 salespeople and let them knock on prospectives' customers' doors or come up to the reception areas. And when the receptionist asked them who they were, or when the door was open and they said, "What do you want?" had them look vacuously and just smile, would you?
No.
That's what most people do when they hire 10,000 salespeople in the form of an advertisement that's read or listened to by 10 or 110 or 510 or 1,510,000 viewers or listeners. You've got to think about what you're dealing with, all right?
Okay. Okay.
Number six, use direct mail. Most people in business, and it matters not whether you are retail or a wholesale or a service or a professional service business, most people do not use direct mail intelligently. Direct mail can be your most powerful ally, your greatest amplifier, your most direct and cost-effective selling mechanism. It can be the most predictable, indefatigable, and powerfully compelling sales force you will ever employ. In order to do that, you have to follow the following requirements. Number one, you have to identify the highest probability, most viable, and predictable prospective customer list, and then you've got to get access to it ethically. The ways to do that depend. If you are in a business-to-business arena, you might go to a list compiler. They are compiled lists of people by industry, by SIC code, which is a definition that talks about the category of business activity that you're involved in, by geography, by size of business, by number of employees, by other critical distinctions. You might go to industry trade magazines and ask if they will rent to you their list of subscribers. Most of them have those subscribers broken down by all kinds of things like size of business, title, job function, all kinds of things. If that doesn't work, you can go to associations. You can go to magazines people read who are aficionados of a certain subject, like cooking or like sports or like running. But you want to find the best possible target list first. Then you want to, once you've done that, you want to make sure that the list is available and you have the name. You don't just want resident or, you know, man of the house or something like that. You want to deliver a message to a specific person. When cost affordable, you want it to look personalized. There's a philosophy that's called A pile, B pile mail, and it's very simple. There are two kinds of mail most people receive, A pile and B pile. The A pile is personalized. It looks important. It looks like it has a content that is either significant to your life, that cannot be denied, or will add value. Adding value means bringing you benefits. Significant means a bill or something you got to pay. Everything else is B pile. It's expendable. It looks junky. It doesn't really have anything that's really meaningful to you. If you can do it, make your mail look A pile. That means personalizing it. That means having a live stamp instead of having it say bulk rate or third class. It may or may not mean having nothing on the outside. I'll get into that in a minute. So first thing you want to do is make sure you can identify a target audience. The next thing you want to do is make your mail look important so it doesn't get thrown into the round file. Then you've got to use the techniques I've already taught you. The letter has to be compelling. It has to have a headline that's the ad for the ad or an opening paragraph. It has to telegraph a benefit, a result, an attractive transference of information or knowledge or protection or enrichment that's going to occur for the reader if he or she goes forward in the ad. A payoff the person will get right there and then. You got to have a great premise that takes them on a journey to an outcome they want. You got to get them to concur with you in the letter about something, or you got to share with them information of a discovery nature that's fascinating and compelling so they will want to continue. You make them an offer that is irresistible. You take away the risk. You tell them how and why they should act. And then you compel them to act now so that they will be in possession of the advantage right away. You make it easy for them to respond. And response might be coming in, calling in, sending something back, visiting a place, whatever it is. Depends on your situation. You try different premises. Remember I taught about testing in one of the first sessions we did?
Yeah.
You test different approaches because one of the most wonderful and also perplexing aspects about direct mail is that the dynamics that work for me may not exactly work for you. So you try different combinations because you're dealing with different premises, different positionings, different prospects, different psychologies. So you try two or three different premises, each one to 100, 500, 1,000 names on out of the list that you rent. So you'll find which one outproduces all the rest on the most desirable criteria. Keep in mind, your criteria may be different than mine. You may have such an incredible back end, so much of a repeat, such a high ticket ongoing product or service that what you want to do is get the maximum number of people in the fold that you can. So you may require a whole different type of a sales letter than I. I may, on the other hand, want less customers but a higher quality of customer because I require more profit up front because my cash flow and my capital resources aren't as good as yours. Different people have different objectives. Until you know your objectives, you cannot craft the right letters, plural, to test against one another. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So you want a good letter. The letter must be powerful. The letter should be tested against other ones to find the ultimate or the optimal direct selling letter to send to your target audiences. When you send it out, if it works, you keep doing it until it stops working. And by that I mean either or a combination. You keep mailing it to more names on the list, or you keep remailing it to the list. What you don't do is get a good return and stop and say, well, I guess I'll do it again in 6 months. The cardinal rule in direct mail is you keep doing it till it stops working. And even stopping working, you may still do it more if you start seeing that stopping working means that instead of breaking even or making money, you're able to mail it, and now you lose 10 or 15% on bringing a customer in. You may be so rich on the back end that it's worth doing that because every time you bring in 10 customers and you lose $100, you accrue $2,000 in the first year in repeat customers. Does that make business? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you really have to think through what you're doing and do what is going to work.
You absolutely do. The next step in this process, and it's a long one, and I'm going to go to a lot of explanatory detail on this, and frankly, Marty, if this is all we get done in this session, that's okay, because any one of these changes will produce a linear improvement in your business. Any combination of these changes will start giving you explosive quantum leaps, and I'm just talking about the first category, increasing your customer base. When I get into the other nuances and you combine hybrids of all three of these categories together, that's where you start getting 1,000 and 2,000 and 5,000%, meaning 15 and 20 time improvements over 3 or 4 years in a business.
Okay. Yeah, I can see where that happens. It's the multiplier.
Exactly that. It's the geometric multiplier that none of your competitors will ever understand, because it's very simple, but it's very complex to bring to bear. And I'm trying to explain it and dissect it and compartmentalize it so every segment of it is easy to understand and exciting to want to implement.
Okay.
The next category in this first box of growing your customer base is using telemarketing. You must use telemarketing because it's the greatest manpower extender you've got. Telemarketing, as I've indicated in a previous session, has an abundance of applications. You should set up telemarketing for the following. Number one, if you have customers, you should analyze the buying habits of the customers and segment them by known buying tendencies. A segment of your customers are going to be infinitely more valuable than the rest, 20% on average. They're going to buy more often. They're going to buy higher ticket items. They're going to buy more profitable items. You should know who they are. You should work them more frequently and more directly and more interactively than others. If you don't have an existing sales force, you should establish an internal telephone selling group or person or designate whose job it is to frequently and at time-critical intervals contact your better segment of customers and inform them and acknowledge them and alert them to new things and give them rights of first refusal or hold certain items out for them or order or offer them the chance to have special items order and nurture and expand upon their inherent and their predictable and their known buying tendencies. Does that make sense?
It does. I don't think it's done often.
It's never done. But I'm just trying to tell you, I mean, you asked me how somebody could improve their business by a factor of 10 or 20 times in a year or two or three. I'm just answering the question, Marty.
It seems like if I got a call from one of the businesses that I frequent and they had something special that they could set aside or special order for me, I think I'd probably fall off of my chair first and then come back to the phone and say yes, because that's so unusual.
The trick is to understand you can't do it in a zombified, automatronish manner. You do it with a philosophy of honoring and revering the importance and the preferred value that customer has to you. Once you do an analysis, you will find that there is a handful, relatively speaking, of customers generating an enormous amount of your business. They owe being treated special. They owe being communicated with. They owe being acknowledged. They owe being extended opportunities and buying preferences and buying assistances at a level the other people who buy a far less amount and far less frequently don't deserve. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Okay. You use telemarketing to follow behind every mailing you do to any outside audience and definitely every mailing you do to inside. And I erred when I was talking about direct mail because I failed to say I was talking about outside. The easiest application of direct mail, and all these have infinite possibilities. I'm just getting you started. I could do a full day on any one of these categories, Marty, and we wouldn't exhaust it. But in direct mail, the first thing you want to do is schedule a regular, systematized, ongoing mailing you do to your entire customer base. And you might segment or segregate the customer base by buying interest, by frequency, by size, and do different kinds of mailings or more often to different segments, but you mail them frequently as a service, giving them advantage, giving them informed awareness of upcoming opportunities, of new products, of ways to use products better, of opportunities to set themselves up to avail themselves of more of your products or more frequently of a product they're buying. Does that make sense?
It does.
Then
it does.
You use telemarketing also to follow behind. Whenever you do a mailing, whatever the mailing yields, you can predictably assure yourself that between 30 and 1,000% more business will emanate by phoning afterwards. How many times have you ever gotten a letter or seen an ad for a business that you frequent to some degree and thought, you know, I probably should buy that or get that or order that or stop in and look at that, but you just in the freneticism of your day-to-day activities, you never get around to doing it, Marty?
Happens all the time.
If a nobly intended, respectful, fascinating, interesting, appreciative representative of that company called you and said, Mr. Stacy, I don't know if you got the letter we sent. I hope you did, because it told about a new product line we've got, and it's doing so well, and the people that are buying it are so impressed with how much benefit it's bringing to their lives or their business or whatever the application is, and we're selling so many of them that it frankly looks like we're going to be in limited supply and maybe even allocation very soon, and before we run out, the owner wanted me to call you personally and just make sure you knew about it, make sure you knew we extended you the opportunity, make sure you, above everyone else, got one of the first rights to have one of these installed in your business or home or working for you before we run out and we got an allocation. So I'm calling just to see that you got it, to tell you about it, to answer any questions, and offer you to please try it out. Because you're a special customer, we have no problem letting you try it out for 3 days at our risk or 30 days at our risk or, I mean, whatever. You see, would that be offensive, Marty?
No, I don't think it would be.
Pretty exciting to contemplate, isn't it?
Yeah, the potential seems enormous.
It's if you could figure enormous times 10, that's what the potential is if you can do it. You can use telemarketing as a mechanism of keeping communication with your customers, keeping aware of how they see you, what they want, what they need, what makes them happy, what makes them happier. You can do surveys at key intervals. The surveys can yield you three things. It can be actually a profit center. By calling customers at various time segments and saying, you're one of our better customers, or you're not one of our better customers, or you buy only infrequently, and we would like to ask you some questions. Number one, why don't you buy more often? Number two, what is it you see? Why is it you buy from us in the first place? Number three, how do we respond? Number four, what would we have to do to get you to buy more often? What we have to give? What we have to offer? What do we not do? What's not there? Do we offend you? Is there something about our business, our premise, our facilities, our bathroom, whatever, that causes you not to come back more often? Do you buy from other people? If so, who do you buy from? Why do you buy? What recommendation, what advice could you give me to help me make my company more advantageous to you? Do you see what would happen if you did that?
You'd be operating in a known area rather than in the dark.
You would not be operating from conjecture. At the same time, if you added to the process I've just suggested one neat little nuance, and you said, and by the way, Mr. Stacy, in appreciation for your cooperation and your candor, I'd like to do something reciprocal. I've got in my facility right now just 50, you know, high-tech, super colossal 15 megaton widgets that we normally sell for $1,000 a piece. If you have a use for any of those in your business, I would be only too happy to sell you one or up to 10 of them for only $600, which is obviously a reduction of $400, but that's how much I appreciate your candor, and that's how badly we want you as customers. Obviously, I can't price them that way ongoing because I would probably lose money. I don't know that I'll make anything on this, but it's my great pleasure to try to extend to you the same courtesy and honesty that you've done for me. I think maybe you might be interested.
I'd be awfully inclined.
Yeah, so it's a numbers game, Marty. If you do it to 1,000 people a week, do you think maybe 300 or 200 would say yes?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what that could mean incrementally to you? Do you see the ones that say no, what would mean as far as the communication you've got? You start doing it yourself first to get a feel for it. When it works, you put on a staff person. If it works great, then you turn it into a profit center, and you have a dedicated staff just doing that.
And this all stems back and away from not just doing things ad hoc.
No, it's all systematized and integral. It's all basically optimizing every integrated aspect of the selling system that you're putting together.
Okay.
All right, so there are other ways to use telemarketing. Telemarketing is a great vehicle. A lot of companies, a lot of people can't afford a selling staff because to put a person in the field, whether the field is your city, your state, your region, the country, or the world, can cost a lot of money. It costs travel, it costs gas, it costs salaries, it costs supplies, it costs samples, it costs inefficiency. I mean, to put a man or woman in the field, I've heard it costs a couple hundred dollars to make a sales call. Well, if you don't have deep pockets or you don't have discretionary or available funding to do it, it can be quite a costly expenditure to contemplate. Instead of doing that, you can develop a very cost-effective telephone selling division where a man or woman from a fixed place can call locally, regionally, nationally, internationally. He or she can develop customers at about 1/20th the cost that it requires to put a salesperson in the field. Sometimes because of the busyness of people's lives, they prefer dealing by telephone because it's more efficient. People on the phone can have more authority because their voices project images that may not be possible in person. You can manage them more effectively. They get about 3 or 4 times or 10 times in some cases the productivity per day that they would if they were in the field. You can try different experimental processes and premises. They can be used to go into areas you don't have penetration. They can be used to introduce new products. They can be used to get you prospects. They can be used to work areas or segments of an industry that are not cost-effective to have a salesperson call upon. Do you see the possibilities, Marty?
Yeah, it's fabulous. And the idea that this is actually can be far more effective than a person in the field, too, multiply effective, is pretty exciting.
And you can normally get, and the way to do it is bringing in, when you do it, you got to do it from the beginning. I mean, I'm going to take a long time. If we don't get through the whole list, that's okay. What's important is we don't just run through it superficially and you